Blog Talk Radio.
We're going hopping, hop. We're going hopping today. When things are popping, pop. A Philadelphia way. We're going to drop it, drop. On all the music they play on the bandstand. We're going swinging, swing. We're going to swing in the crowd. And we'll be clinging, swing. And floating high as a cloud. The phones are ringing, ring. My mom and dad are so proud. I'm on bandstand. And I'll jump and hey, I may even throw up my handstand. Because I'm on the American bandstand. When we dance, we'll slow the show. All the guys in the grandstand. What a swinger I am. I am on American. We're going hopping to stay, where things are popping, the Philadelphia way. We're going to drop it on all the music they play on the bandstand.
To John Talk Radio. This is August 27th, 2016 episode. My special guests tonight are John and David Timmons. We've got a very interesting topic tonight. It's TV's portrayal of rock and roll through the decades. The Timmons brothers will address the love-hate affair between rock and roll and television. Since the 1950s, when both industries began to blossom to the present, TV and rock had been set at odds sometimes and have enjoyed some moments of mutual celebration, but for the most part, they coexist. From the early days of rock and roll, when bands appeared on such television shows as the Ed Sullivan Show, American Bandstand, Don Kirshner's Rock Concert, Top of the Pops, and others, censorship was evident, although acts like Elvis Presley, the Rolling Stones, and the Doors performed their music amid controversy. Some of the rock's greatest moments, such as the Beatles' American debut, the 1985 Live Aid concert, and Michael Jackson's Moonwalk, also were captured on TV. There is sure to be something to trigger a memory of historic rock and roll moments on television. I'd like to welcome John and David to the show.
How you doing, John?
Great. Thanks, guys.
John,
thanks for
John,
coming
good
on.
To be here. Good to be here. I'm excited about this topic. As you know, we did the live presentation with it, and there's just so much information out there on it that when we did that presentation, it was an hour and 45 minutes, and we barely got to the surface of what could have been covered.
Right. It went very fast, and you guys covered so many things, but there were so many things left to talk about. And that's what's good about, you know, we can cover that tonight. We can talk about the things maybe that we didn't have a chance to listen to the other day. And we can get to some of those topics, John and David, and we can talk about how that, you know, music was basically an audio thing, and then all of a sudden, here we go. You know, now we can see the artist. Now, not only can we hear them like they were hearing them on the old 78s and the old records, and now that television came around and now that people can see them, what do you think was the most important thing about that, where it wasn't so much that, you know, now you're listening to your favorite artist and the music is stimulating you in certain ways, but now it's like visual. That was a big thing. What do you guys think that, why was that such a big thing?
I think, John, basically the relationship between TV and rock and roll, at first it was kind of leery, because you got to remember, we're still with that generation of Mitch Miller and them, so it was a big risk for ABC, NBC, and CBS. But yet they realized the potential, the way the record-buying public, especially the teenagers, was, we got to capitalize this and put them on TV. And I think that when Elvis debuted on TV at night, Ed Sullivan called him a gentleman, because Elvis is Elvis. But what tickled me, though, they would show him from the waist up so he couldn't be Elvis the pelvis. But the relationship would be steady. But sometimes, like we brought up in our one program, sometimes they want to make fun of the rock stars, too. And I think basically we would see this down the road, too, and like John and I talk about. And I'll let John talk a little bit on this, too.
I think that the TV visual, John, was that, as you said earlier, at the beginning there, they kind of grew up together, TV and rock and roll. And rock and roll was really the first genre of music that throughout its entire lifespan had this visual of TV. All the other kind of music, country and western, jazz, rhythm and blues, did not grow up with TV always having the visual. It relied more on the audio. And I think it was such a give and take relationship because it was so different. And rock and roll was so different. It was something new too. And the older suits, if you will, the gray hairs that ran the corporations did not know how to incorporate rock and roll or even accept it or understand it. And I will say this, it sure made fads occur in a hurry, because when American Bandstand started appearing in the late afternoons at a safe time when mom and dad's not home or at least watching TV, they were seeing the latest dance crazes. They were seeing what fashions were in vogue. And so a kid in the Southeast or a kid in the Northwest could see what was going on in Philadelphia there at American Bandstand. And we really hadn't had that before, where something could reach the whole coast to coast so quickly based on one
TV. A young guy
TV
could even
show.
Grow his own ducktail too, John.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a good point, because the fashion was being exposed. Like, you know, if you're here in Ohio and you don't really know what's going on anywhere else, now all of a sudden you can see these kids in Philadelphia and they've got the black sweaters on, you know, and they've got the ducktails, like you said, David, and they've got the fancy shiny shoes and all that. That had to also be a marketing tool, don't you think?
Oh, definitely.
Very much
because,
so.
Yeah, I say this because, like John pointed out, you get this there. Dick Clark knowed how to do this, and so it just exploded. I know the girls, first time the poodle skirts, and I know all the girls, that was the first time that was shown on TV, and the girls had to have that. The guys had that James Dean jacket. You almost had to have your leather jacket. Hey, the Fonz, but this stuff like that, and that would, let's say you lived on a farm in the Midwest, turn that on, and your dad came home and said, "Dad, I got to have me a black leather jacket." And then your dad says, "You've been watching that American Bandstand?"
Yeah. That was personified with the Beatles, because then everybody wanted, you know, Beatle boots. And then it changed the hairstyle, like you're saying, David, from the ducktails and the greasy, you know, greaser look. You know, everybody had long hair, but it was slicked back. And it was greasy. And it was crazy looking.
And you think back to the music, too, and John brought up a good point. The gray hair executives did not know how to market to this teenage audience, And if you watch some of the old shows like Hollywood Palace and Am, they'd have an MC like Ray Bolger, didn't know what in the heck who they were. I remember one time the Raiders one show, and he just said they're just five guys dressed up as colonials. He didn't even know how to introduce them.
And he was the MC. Now, Ray Bolger, when he won the Wizard of Oz actors.
The Scarecrow,
there,
yeah.
Okay, he was a Scarecrow, so he was mainly a dancer.
Yes.
And from another generation. And so, yeah, I have seen that same film, and it was like, so they would make light of it and make joke of it. In fact, John, if you remember, during for our presentation, I think we showed the introduction of Red Skelton when he was introducing the Rolling Stones and talking about, oh, I've been Rolling Stoned a couple of times, you know. Now, no, wait, it was Dean Martin. I've been rolled,
yeah.
I've been stoned, you know. Now here's the Rolling
yep.
Stone, you know. And so you try to reach the older audience by having the MCs be people like Dean Martin or Ray Bolger. And yet, you know, you had this rising popularity of rock and roll, and it became kind of a weird mix on primetime TV, particularly by the time it got to the mid-60s with the British invasion.
Yeah, but you make a great point about the American Bandstand, because that kind of – It went right through that, right? It started off with the rock and rollers and the, like Dave was saying, the DuckTales and, you know, the Bobby Bees and the Bobby Darins and all those guys, and that was all that rock and roll. And then what you're saying, John, then things really changed. Now with the British invasion, but then people started thinking, like, and I was one of them, I want to be like that. I want to look like that. I don't know how many artists I've interviewed, how many musicians that have said it was that day, it was that Ed Sullivan day that I said to myself, that's what I'm going to do. My life is already mapped out.
John,
I'm going to be
well arrested. How well I remember this night for John and I. Our older sister wanted to watch it real bad anyway. Well, so Dad had to give up Bonanza that night. How well, that wasn't easy to do. Paul and the boys.
Yeah.
But I can remember that night, John and I watched them. And right then, John and I looked at each other and thought, well, here's something that's different. And I remember Mom said, all them boys need is a haircut. Remember, John?
Yeah.
But it was so amazing what they captured that night, because I can remember going back to elementary school, and that's the only thing all the kids was talking about, and I had to have me a pair of Beetle boots, and you just automatically just wanted that. And I think the biggest influence on us, though, John, would be later on with Where the Action Is, when John and I, we identified with the Raiders for some reason. I don't know if it was the uniforms, whatever it was. After that, it just clicked, didn't it, John?
Well, it comes back to you had the visual. You could see
yeah.
things. And I'm not sure, probably in the Raiders, of course, their music, you know, was good on its own. But, you know, a group like that really had a look and appearance 10 years earlier, you know, they probably would not have had the success that they did, because there was still this uncertainty about how you're going to deal with these rock and rollers. And you got to remember, when the Raiders were doing that, groups, for the most part, had, like, some kind of identity, costumes. Well, you know, you think of the Beatles wearing those suits that did not have the collar at the top. You think of the Young Rascals having the kid knicker look. You had the Beach Boys wearing the pinstripe button-down dress shirts. So, in a sense,
Gary
it was very
Puckett
common to see the group all dressed
alike. Remember when we saw Gary Puckett? They wore the Civil War uniforms. They all had their own little gimmick. And you know what I think about what brought this on, though? They knowed how to market them. But I think, John, the biggest one, me and you talked about this before, was the Rolling Stones. First time we saw them, I seen where five homely guys could get girls to scream. I said, we all have a chance.
They, it was crazy. I mean, I thought it was so amazing. Like, to me, it was the first time I saw the Beatles was not on Ed Sullivan. It was a film. It was like a it was on the Jack Parr show. It was kind of maybe a couple of weeks before. Or, it was a like a film clip. It was
yes.
on Jack Parr, and it came on, and it was a Friday night, and it came on, and it said, biggest sensation from England, the Beatles. And they showed this picture of them where they were on stage playing. They had the long hair and the suits, and all these people were screaming and going crazy. And I can remember just stopping in our living room and thinking, wow, what's going on here? Because, you know, I'm old enough to remember Elvis and all that and Ricky Nelson and all that, but none of that affected me at all. The music was good, but it wasn't, it just had no appeal to me. And it was like, I remember I had an older sister too, and she was into all that and, you know, all of that music. And I was just not interested in it. Isn't that weird? And then all of a sudden, when the Beatles, I was a big Beach Boys fan. I loved them. But when the Beatles came out and we could see them and we could see the reaction of those people, it was like this phenomenal event happening, this cultural change, this shift in everything. Isn't that cool that we were around for that? Because
oh, John, I'll tell you, it's amazing how we identify, all three of us, on this. One thing I think we all realize how talented those four guys were. I've talked about this with John on our history shows and everything else. Four individuals, but talently, you could tell what was ahead of them was was going to be no stop. But you brought up Jack Parr. Well, Jack Parr put them on there to make fun of them that night from the Cavern Club. I think I'm right on that, didn't he, John?
Well, it was the first time they were shown on American TV.
Yeah,
it was. What I was seeing was the Cavern Club. This was like a film clip. It was like a newsreel.
Oh.
It was like they were showing different things from around the world, and they just showed, okay, you guys need to see this. This is going on in England. This is four musicians that are – it was black and white, of course. It was – I can remember – I don't know if it's online anywhere. I haven't really looked. But it was just this – you know, the four guys with their instruments playing on a stage and surrounded by people, and it was like a newsreel. And that was the first time I think I had heard of them at that point. And it was like – that was where – my friend and I looked at each other that was with me, and we thought we got to find out more about that band, because the music was like, what's that, you know, guy with the rats following a guy around and the Pied Piper. It was like that. It was like message that you got, that you were like, whoa, I've never heard anything like that before.
Beatlemania.
It was amazing.
You know,
and you know what's really cool about that? Just one more point. You know what is amazing about that? People are still, to this day, to this moment, trying to duplicate that, and they can't do it. No matter who they are, whether they're Pearl Jam or whether they're the Foo Fighters or whether they're any, you know, these people, they are only imitating what happened that night.
Well, you remember the group called John, you remember the group called the Knack? They was compared, and that's Taboo. They made one album, the second album didn't do anything. And there's another young group called the Bay City Rollers out of Scotland. Howard Cosell put them on his show, hoping that would be the next set of Beatles. And it's just like coming off the bench. It sometimes does not work. And you don't want to be compared with the Beatles, I tell you. I think death.
No, I think that's what everybody is still trying to do. And I remember when the Babies came out, I think they were on – it was either Mike Douglas or Merv Griffin. It was one of those two shows during the day. And I was in the kind of same situation, walking by a television set, and I saw the Babies come on. And that they were like – pretty cool, but it was still, they're trying to capture that. You really made a good point, David, on the Knack, because that they tried. The Knack came out when video first came out, when videotapes came out, when people were getting VCRs, so they were able to kind of piggyback on that. because that was a big thing. Because in the past, if you wanted to watch something on television, you had to look in the TV guide and you had to see when it was on and you had to schedule your time around that. Then when you got a VCR with a tape, now you could watch something when you wanted to watch it. And I don't know about what you guys think, but wasn't that one of the first – that was pretty big, because now you could watch a movie or you could, they would sell videos of the bands, of the videos, and you could buy those. And I thought that's pretty cool, because now I want to watch that. I can do it on my own time. And I thought that changed things a lot too. But you're right, the Knack, they tried to look like the Beatles. Didn't they have the – like the suits,
even
like
the
Beatles.
Album cover. Yeah, even the album cover and Capitol. They did everything. Because I remember, hey, John, you remember this well. Mer and I brought it home and showed it to you. He said, they're a takeoff, is what you said, didn't you?
Yeah.
And the Romantics. Yeah, and the Romantics were kind of like that. They had the little suits and the hair. And the best parody of the Beatles ever were the Ruttles. That's just the – you guys – I love the Ruttles. I can't get enough of them. They were so funny. And they were just making fun of the Beatles. But then they kind of got at their own audience because they were really good. Go ahead.
John, I have to laugh about this because when I bought the Ruttle album, and John will remember this, the neighborhood came over to hear it, didn't they, John? And I played it. And we kept all singing Love Life. We sung Love Life more than we did All You Need Is Love. Remember that, John? We sung along with the Ruttles.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just a funny parody. That's you know, the British humor. That's,
and,
you know.
And you know, John, you were talking about by the time Knack came around, you could start getting VHS tapes and buying the videos. And that took, as far as the visuals, to another level. Because, as you said, you could watch it on your time when you wanted to see it. And we referred to this during our presentation. It brought us out of the dark era. Dave and I, we have labeled this period when the variety show was leaving primetime TV. Ed Sullivan was going off the air early 70s. Red Skelton show was going off the air. The Smother Butters Comedy Hour was going off the air. And these were all the shows we're bringing in Rock and Roll X. And they all seemed to go off about within the same year, about 71, 72. But the thing about it, there was nothing to replace them on primetime TV. And we often call this era from about 72, really until the MTV came around in 1981, the dark era, because that's when the rock and roll acts were shifted from primetime TV, where everybody in America could see them when people was watching. Now we're going to move you on weekends, and it's going to start at the earliest 11:30 p.m., or even 1 a.m., because we don't want you on primetime TV. And even then, we might have some censorship come through, as you remember being the story being told at the presentation with WKRC out of Cincinnati, when the station manager was watching at the first show of In Concert, ABC, and Alice Cooper was doing his thing, and he immediately called down the station. And this is on the internet, by the way. If people want to search this out, all they got to do is put in WKRC In Concert 1971 Alice Cooper, or 72 Alice Cooper, and they will read this. And all of a sudden, there was Opie and Andy walking down the creek,
with their fishing poles.
Yeah. So we go from Alice Cooper throwing things at the people in the crowd to Andy Griffith with a fishing pole. I'm like, I don't see Alice walking along with Andy and Opie there on that road.
Aunt B thought of that. Aunt B probably looked at Alice and got scared half to death.
So what do you guys think about that? Because there you've got now the big executives in the television. It's money. It's their livelihood. It produces, you know, listeners. They get advertisers. They get successful. Now they've got this morality issue, which they didn't have a lot of before.
John, this was the big fear they had. Rock and roll had this fear in the 50s and 60s. Yes, but the 70s was totally different. The songwriters were expressing themselves more. They weren't afraid to do different things. You think of David Bowie on their Grand Funk Railroad. they were going to express themselves. Mark Fawner with Terry's shirt off, which some executives said, oh, he's going like that. Jim Morrison was going to do what he's going to do, and let's put them on at late night. And you wonder, I just got done reading about Bad Company. Bad Company's manager would not even let Bad Company be on TV because he thought it would hurt concert ticket sales. And you do, and they were only on TV twice I know of in the United States because he said if they're overexposed, he said, I'm not going to make money with them. And so you have that. And so, and I can remember waiting late at night one night to see Mata Hoople. And I told us some of our shows, and they was going to be on In Concert. And I'll never forget this. I said, John, you going to stay and watch? He said, I don't care for them one way or the other. But they put on a good show, though.
But that's a point, too, we probably need to talk about is the you would have to, in order to see Grand Funk Railroad or in order to see Bad Company or to see any of those things, they would come to your town, you would buy a ticket. You would buy, you know, some merchandise or whatever, and that was money to the band and to the management and to all the people that work for the band. Now you can watch them on the Midnight Special. Now you can watch them on the rock concert. What do you guys think of that? I mean, that was a good point, David. What happened out of that? I mean, did they finally decide, well, I think we can go on TV, or did they hold off?
With Bad Company, John, basically it came down to Paul Rogers saying, we have to do this. And the manager realized that, and of course they took right off. But then again, we have a situation. Do we put our groups on TV? And like I said, and I'll tell you, John and I was talking about, John, what group we talk about? It was Kiss. Kiss was never, they was word of mouth until they got on TV. And I'll let John continue on that, but he knows quite a bit about that.
I would say we were talking about the 70s and going that dark era, and Dave sort of alluded to it, was that at least in the variety shows of the 60s, as I referred earlier, they were still dressing alike. They were usually wearing suits. They were looking into the camera. They would follow the rules for the most part, unless you were the Doors or Rolling Stones. And you gave your own lyrics, you know. And I heard an interview with the son of the person who was the general manager of the TV show Upbeat, which started in Cleveland and became syndicated. And even was shown in, you know, many markets throughout the USA. And he said one of the reasons that Upbeat went off the air by 1971 and had been highly successful since 64. They were located in Cleveland, but a lot of acts came through. He said that the rockers were more unkept. Their hair was not only long, it was unruly. They wouldn't look into the camera. You didn't know if they came in high. And he said it was just the people who were paying the bills, the companies, the corporations, like, well, do we want to be affiliated with that? Do we want to put our money and have Dial Soap be this unkept singer here who looks like he hasn't maybe washed for a while.
Wouldn't that hurt Skunk Baxter's feelings, though?
But that came with the visual. And so it kind of led to this dark era. And I think that's one of the reasons it got shifted to late night TV, because I think it wasn't quite as, I guess, censored, if you will. And to go to David's point about Bad Company and John, what you were saying, I think they finally compromised that, okay, the TV appearance may help the merchandising, may help sell tickets, it won't hurt. Because I think there was some concerns about that, too. They didn't want to have overexposure. And they finally gave in, but I think they also had to go on their terms. If you remember the In Concert show on ABC, it was 11:30. Midnight Special was NBC on the same Friday nights, early Saturday morning, 1 a.m. They wanted more of a concert setting where the music was the focus and not like a variety show where they were just another act appearing with like a dancer, a comedian, and they wanted to create more of a concert atmosphere. And so I think that's why they were willing to go on those TV shows like that, because that was their comfort zone, and it showed what they did best at performing before an audience.
Hey, John, you brought up a good point, too. That was one thing I know what really helped Grand Funk Railroad, because the time they was on In Concert, they just put out The Flight of the Phoenix. And it wasn't selling that well, but after they was on In Concert, it took off. So it was their help. But I'd like to bring up this point. Then you had other programs, like the Raiders had their own TV show every day. And you talk about overexposure, but it didn't hurt them. And they was on 6 days a week. And you just wonder, about overexposure, but I think it's hurt them to get in the Hall of Fame. That I don't know. But remember, we used to watch them about every day.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, too. I think that in the bottom line a lot, guys, is the fact that, you know, the almighty dollar gets right in there. I mean, they can probably get around and talk about it and say, you know, I don't like those hippies, and I don't like those, and I don't like this, and I don't like that kind of music and all that. And then somebody can show them, well, look at the numbers. And they're going, oh, okay. Yeah, let's have them on.
Hey, good John, point. I remember the first time I saw Sonny and Cher on TV, and they looked like Fred and Wilma Flintstone. They had their fur on, and all they needed was Barney Rebel and Dino with them.
They had their little outfits on, didn't they?
Yeah. But I always give one person I got to give credit for was Ed Sullivan was not afraid to do those things. I don't know if his show would have continued in the 70s, what would happen, because John brought up a good point on Upbeat. Terry Knight and the Pack was the house band on there. Of course, we know Terry Knight and the Pack would later become Grand Funk Railroad. Well, Terry Knight got mad at Grand Funk Railroad when they decided, we're no longer going to look into that camera. We're going to do our white. And Terry Knight always wore a nice little suit jacket and stuff. And when he saw what the band was doing in, and then but basically TV, the relationship between TV and rock groups is always going to be on a seesaw. One side's not, and we still see it yet today. They're still afraid of an old Bob Dylan and an old Rolling Stone yet. Let's put them late at night. And I think we're always going to see this.
Why do you think there was such a big deal about them not looking into the camera?
I'm going to let John
I don't know,
that.
Don, because when I heard that interview, the only thing I can think is that up until then, you know, when you watch the Beatles, you see those old films on Ed Sullivan's show, very much they are in looking to the camera, looking to the audience, smiling, you know, enjoying themselves. And not just the Beatles, but most members, they would actually play to the audience, maybe not always smiling. But I guess it's maybe just something of mistrust that if you're not looking at the camera, like can you trust this person? Are they going to do something that is deviant on stage, and should I be ready to hit as far as the censorship button?
Hey, John, bring up the point of the Ed Sullivan show tonight, what Paul Revere told Ed Sullivan's cameraman about the personnel change. This is really describes this.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I'll let you go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. Well, hey, John, I want to bring up his point. The Raiders was in the middle of a personnel change. They'd already had fired Drake Levy. And Paul Revere knew this, and he told the cameraman to zero in on Freddie Willer. Do not zero in on Fang or Smitty. They're leaving the band, so we don't want them. And they had the two new members waiting backstage. And this is on live TV at the time. And Freddie Willer was on a talk show and talked about this. He said he was more nervous than any other night. He said, I know the songs, but he said I'm replacing Drake Levy on the Ed Sullivan show, and they're going to be zeroing the camera on me. And, John, I thought for sure Freddie even realized it, did he?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, but the Raiders was in the middle of personnel change, and then after another program I was watching one time, all the members of Steppenwolf had appeared on Hollywood Palace. They was going to walk out on John Kay that night at the end of the show. So sometimes you could be in a band and say, oh, where did all my members go?
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that happened with Steppenwolf, the bass player and the drummer. And Deep Purple, when Glover left the band, he looked right at John Lord. It was on the In Concert show. A Smoke on the Water was selling real well. He said, this is it. Him and Richie Blackmore both walked out at the same time, and they thought they was on TV too much, John. So you don't know. You really don't know what the artists want sometimes.
My guest is John and David Timmons. We're talking about TV's portrayal of rock and roll through the decades. Let's take a quick music break, and we'll be right back after this. We're back with John and David Timmons. We're talking about TV's portrayal of rock and roll through the decades. Guys, walk us through those shows, the Paul Revere and the Raiders shows. What was a typical show like? Were they half-hour shows? Were they hour shows? How much was it music? Was there skits involved? What was a typical show like?
Well, John, it was to me, John, it was comedy, Marx Brothers, rock and roll, and a little bit for the they kind of would kid the teen girls in the audience. A typical Raiders show. Now, where the action is, that would show them and playing. But when the Raiders got their own show, happening '68, they produced it themselves. They did everything. And one of my favorite all-time skits was Super Raider. And all five Raiders try to get into the same phone booth to become Super Raider. And they're all trying to get in and out. And then they'd always introduce a new song or have an act on there. They would have anybody from Hubert Humphrey on there to the Steppenwolf, the Beach Boys. They were very personal, very well-mannered on the stage. And Charlie Coe, when he was a member of the Raiders, made this comment. He couldn't keep up with their schedule. You had to go on tour. You had to go to the recording studio. Plus, you had to tape the shows. And Mark Lansing made the best comment. He said we didn't have no life because we was working 7 days a week, and if they weren't on the road. But like I said, they were just made for television. And I'll let John talk about it because he hated to miss an episode.
Well, they were half-hour programs, and it started really the Happening 68 evolved from when ABC took off Where the Action Is, which you just played the theme, by the way, and that was the Paul Revere and the Raiders version, although Freddie Boom Boom Cannon was the one he actually aired for the TV show. And Dick Clark Productions did Where the Action Is, and he liked the Raiders not only as musicians, but really they had a really great knack for comedy. They were comfortable with the microphone being on camera. And that's why he wanted them to have their own weekly show on Saturday afternoons called Happening 68. And essentially, it would be a great opportunity and a forum to do their newest hit. And their members, we've talked about this before, all five of them were probably just as well known as John, Paul, George, and Ringo, because you buy those old teen magazines from 68, I mean, they highlighted all five Raiders and would have profiles on them and win a date and so on. So this is right at the peak of when the Raiders were next to the Beatles and Rolling Stones, the best-selling group in America. And the Happening 68 did so well, it had been on for about 3 months. Then Dick Clark approached the Raiders again and said, hey, I want to do a show Monday through Friday now, plus the Saturday show. And at that point, they added on the Battle of the Bands. They would have groups come from throughout the country. And I know there's one rerun I've seen on YouTube. It's a group from Marysville competing in Ohio there. And I think
wow.
they lost to an all-girl band. It's really fun to watch. But I always wonder, how many of those artists were in those Battle of the Bands? Did somebody come from one of those bands and became famous? Well, you know, I would like to research that. But they'd always have guests. I mean, the judges would be these kind of celebrities from other ABC shows so they could promote what else was on. For instance, one of the judges, it was Sally Fields. And, of course, at the time, ABC had The Flying Nun. So it gave
right.
her a great opportunity to promote that show. You would see the guy who was on a show called Maya, M-A-Y-A, where they were set in Africa, I think.
Sammy Khan.
What was his name?
Sammy Khan.
Yeah, that's it. He was like one of the judges. And sometimes there's one program I've seen on YouTube. It's from 1968, right before the Summer Olympics in Mexico City. And it had the three main swimmers from the USA Olympic team serving as the judges. So and then sometimes they'd have guests like Clint Eastwood to be on there to interview, talk about his newest movie. Lee Marvin would be on there talking about his newest movie. They'd have some really good guests. And I don't know where they got the budget, but I know they had Wilson Pickett on there, James Brown.
Jerry Bishop was on there a few times.
Yes.
And remember, John?
Mick Jagger by himself.
Yes. The Steppenwolf appeared there a couple of times.
He was on there.
And they were on there. And
these were all half-hour shows. So, you know, John, you think about, you know, you're talking Monday through Friday. It's happening. Happening 68 on Saturday. Well, eventually Happening 68 would come off. They'd just be on Monday through Friday. But at its peak, they were doing six shows a week to talk about overexposure, but it had to have ratings that lasted two seasons. It wasn't like it was just a summer replacement series.
And then when they would be on tour, John, and John, remember this, Mama Cass would host the show when the Raiders were on tour occasionally.
That's right.
She would host the show, John, occasionally. Mama Cass would. And then when the Raiders came back, because I remember one stretch, it was 1 week, and me and John said, where's the Raiders at? But when they'd be on a world tour, sometimes they just couldn't take the shows. But one of my favorite all-time shows, though, was when Adam West and Burt Ward was on there, and the Raiders end up appearing on Batman. But they supported the Penguin for mayor. They made a mistake there, but they couldn't help that.
were they live shows, guys, or were they taped?
They were
taped. Hey, John, tell about Charlie Coe, how you read about this, why he couldn't handle it anymore.
Well, I think you pretty much already described
it
was just too much time. Another category that I'd like to go into, though, back to the 60s, you know, we're talking about how a Lee Marvin, a Clint Eastwood, you have a Sally Fields appear on the Raiders doing It's Happening. Sometimes it's interesting to look at some of the musicians who would appear on primetime TV shows. For instance, were you aware that the Buffalo Springfield was on one of the episodes of Mannix on CBS?
I missed that.
You need to check it out. You can see a young Neil Young playing there and singing in the background while here's Mannix. He's in like in a pool club and it's Buffalo Springfield playing in the background. I can't remember for sure which song they're playing. I want to say Mr. Soul, but I might be wrong on that. But you can hear the song being played, and they don't actually interview him, but they kind of pan off to the band back and forth between Mannix dealing with these guys that are like more the criminal types, kind of gangsters. And in the background, here's the Buffalo Springfield performing.
Hey, John, you brought up a good point. John, remember PBS when they had that show? It's based on a retail store. It was on Channel 3. I can't remember the name of it. It was made in England. And remember, they'd all work and had that cast of characters. And remember, you called me up one night. They go to a party, and you said the group music they was playing was Roll Away the Stone by the Motha Hoople, you told me.
Yes, I'm trying to remember the show I was watching, but they were using Mott the Hoople. You're right in. It was a PBS show.
I can't
show.
Remember that show. It was on PBS and it was made in England. But
it wasn't Doctor Who, was it?
No. Now Doctor Who had David Bowie on it.
Okay.
He played a villain on that occasionally.
John, I'm just curious if there's any callers out there because you know people try to stump us, but I got some trivia for you tonight here. Here we go.
Okay.
Prime time.
I'm already lost. But
prime time TV. Prime time TV. 1960s. That's the category.
Okay.
What rock group appeared on the Flintstones, and they actually did one of their hit songs, and they gave them like Flintstone-like names?
Oh, I know that one. But the Bo Brummels.
Very good. Good job.
He's good.
Bo Brummel. Yes.
Good job.
Good job.
I absolutely love the Bo Brummels.
Yeah.
I think they are so good. They were, that song, that's almost like a perfect pop song. It's such a great song. And I can't believe I got that.
Hey, John, that's good, John. You remember the show Gilligan's Island? Well, they had a group on there called the Mosquitoes. Well, they were the Wellingtons that sung for that show. But I remember as Miss the lady kept trying to cut her hair all the time. And here we go again, rock and roll TV. And I laugh about this all the time. They was on. I remember on Bewitched, John. Am I right? Was that Chad and Jeremy that and Doris stole their voices?
Gosh, it was either Chad and Jeremy or Voice and Heart.
Or Peter, or Voice and Heart. Voice and Heart, you're correct. And
I remember that.
And Doris stole their voices. They had to do a concert.
That was a very intense episode.
Yeah. and you'd see all these rock groups on these shows, and they would pop up in different ones. How well I remember this. The one key one I remember, and I said, I can't believe they're actually on there, and I looked in the background. It was an old movie. I was staying up one night, and it was Jan and Dean were playing at a ski resort, and they invite the Beach Boys up on stage. And it was probably made in 65. And you watch these shows, La La Cliff Richard movies. Well, we'll probably talk about 1, 2, 3 Go and them. Cliff Richard's shows always be sent around Cliff Richard as a English professor studying stuff as he makes beautiful music and rock and roll. And you get to think about how the TV shows and rock and roll intertwine so much. I can even remember Daniel Boone had Chad and Jeremy on it, and how they brought in the strings and stuff, and Daniel Boone had them at Cincinnati's bar, and they sung their newest hit. And it mentions airplane in it.
hilarious.
So got confused.
You know, Dave mentioned Chad and Jeremy. They were like the stars of primetime TV in the 60s to appear on primetime shows. They had one episode, they were called the Redcoats, and they were on the Dick Van Dyke Show. And Dick Van Dyke and Laura, and Lauren Robb, Petrie, they were the ones chosen to hide them away from all the teenage girls, and they weren't allowed to tell anyone. It was so hard for Dick to keep it. Of course, the role is Rob not tell anyone. He goes, "Honey, I don't know how I can do it. We got the Redcoats staying in our house. I can't tell anyone, you know." And it'd be like Chad and Jeremy were so funny. Like, "That's okay, mate. Just be cool, you know."
Then we have another takeoff: the Beatle cartoons. How well I used to watch them, and the Beatle cartoons were so fun to watch, and used to be where Paul would be along a wooden fence, and he would tell you to follow the bouncing ball, and you'd sing along with the Beatles, and I can remember my favorite episode, where it's Ringo and George think it's Big Egg and Inez is a giant pearl, and for some reason, they always had Ringo being a complete idiot, and he climbs up there to get it, and you want to laugh, but I would love to watch these again. And then John and Paul would say, "How do we get Ringo out of this one?" Then they had Paul dancing with a bear. And, "Do you want to dance with me?"
Oh,
great stuff.
Let's take a break and play. Let's play that, and your bird can sing.
I was going to say
talk
perfect
about,
timing.
Yeah, and we'll be right back. We're talking tonight to John and David Timmons. We're talking about the relationship between rock and roll and television. And as you can see, it's a great subject. I mean, there's just so many really cool things going on. And this was a big one where the Beatles, which were, like we said earlier, just a total phenomenon. And here they are now in animation. And they're funny. And you were talking – I remember that episode where Ringo did a big bird take him or away.
Yeah, the big bird grabs him. And John looks up and goes, that looks like Ringo flying through the air, Paul.
Poor Ringo. He couldn't cut a break, could he? We'll be right back after this. Song that Ringo was singing as he's flying around with that bird, and your bird can sing. Isn't that funny how that tied together there? But
it ties in. I had no idea it would tie in. Hey, John, I got to bring this up. There was another episode where there's a guy building like a Frankenstein monster, and he takes kidnaps Paul in the cartoon, and they put Paul's brain in there. And John says, we got to do the show anyway. And so Frankenstein plays bass and sings Yesterday.
Oh, no. I missed that one.
That was a classic. Well, I don't know why they don't put them out on DVD. I'd have to have them.
You know, what's with that? Because I've read something where they won't release the cartoons. What's up with that?
John, do you know about that? I'll let John answer. He knows a lot of Beatle history.
I really don't know because I'm not sure it was ever even released on VHS, let alone DVD. And I don't know what the holdup is there. I do know they had to write to the songs, and it was people doing the voices. It was not actually the Beatles. So
right.
I don't know what the holdup is. I think it would certainly sell. Now, I have seen merchandising of the cartoon show, the animation, of shirts and sweatshirts like that. Well, the way they looked, and
I have the action figures
and even figurines.
Yep.
Yes, but I don't know why it hasn't been released as a DVD.
But John, to me, it was just one of them shows you just enjoyed watching. And I can remember our oldest brother; he had not known the changes in the Beatles. So we're getting ready to watch them one day. And this is the last year of the show, ain't it, John? About 66. Mm-hmm. I want to say, and so Raymond turns it on to watch it. He said, what's happened to the Beatles? He said, John's wearing glasses now and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So he hadn't kept up with them. And so But John and I would watch that show. And then another thing, John, we used to play where the action is. And the neighbors would come over, we'd act like different groups. Well, we didn't visualize the Beatles because the Beatles weren't appearing on shows live about after 66. So John came up this bit. As always, the Beatles will show their newest film. Remember, John?
And that really was the origin of the rock video was when the Beatles stopped touring and they started using more of the promotional video, and that's where you would that's where you would see the latest appearances and how they changed in looks on the Ed Sullivan Show or on the Red Skelton Show or Hollywood Palace. And at the time, we didn't call them videos. They were just called films. And that really, you look back, that was kind of a major benchmark as far as the way TV approached rock and roll.
And then, John, Paul Revere and the Raiders, we never realized this, for peace of mind, they made one of the first rock videos. Columbia, remember, they had the Raiders make one. And that had to be one of the first videos, and which was a big change. Oh, and I got to bring up this point. We was talking about the Beatles in England. Well, England had their TV show, something like American Bandstand, but theirs was called 1-2-3 Go, and it was hosted a lot of times by Cliff Richard and sometimes somebody else. Well, one of the people they wanted on there one time, Bob Dylan, was in England. Well, Bob Dylan did not like to do TV, and he said, if he did, I'm not going to pantomime a record. I got to sing it live. So they didn't let Bob Dylan appear on 1-2-3 Go. He wouldn't pantomime his record. So, and it came down to unions, I think.
Bob did whatever he wanted to, and he still does.
Yes.
And he still does, yeah.
He wants to sing Sinatra.
He has people walking out of his concert because it's like, oh, are you kidding me? But it's funny how you mentioned, you know, the Beatles cartoon, and then you guys were also talking about the Beatles in film. But then you have another cartoon, Yellow Submarine, which was kind of a whole different type of cartoon. You go from these little animated guys with birds and Frankensteins. Now you're into the psychedelic era. Now you're into the Yellow Submarine. Now you're into the Blue Meanies. Do you guys remember when that came out and how big of an impact that was? And
how well I know this.
Oh, and it came to the theaters, and people were like freaking out because of this movie, because you can do so much in live action movies. They did a tremendous job in A Hard Day's Night. It was a great movie. But then Yellow Submarine takes this psychedelic, mind transferring, crazy 1960s thing, and now it's in visual form.
It's a whole Peter Max trip almost. And here's the key thing, John. I kicked myself about this. Years ago, when that movie came out, John and I was at the G.C. Murphy's in London. Marks had put out a Yellow Submarine, and you winded it up, and all four of the Beatles' heads came up. I looked at it twice. It was only $1.99 at the time. I turned around not long ago. It brings $800 now. And I
could. But $1.99 is a lot of money back then.
It was.
It really was.
And, but you talk about the Yellow Submarine. Here's the point I noticed in that movie more than anything else. If you remember, each Beatle showed us his individual. They had George Harrison standing out in the Himalaya Mountains, the wind blowing through his hair. They had Ringo being typical Ringo again, though. Basically, just like the other cartoons. But the Meanie Land to me was this the part where the Beatles, they were just made for that Yellow Submarine. But the only part of that is the Beatles only appeared in the ending of that looking through a telescope, basically. They did write all the songs for it. One of my favorites, Hey Bulldog. But John, I'll let John cover this more because he knows about the Fab Four on this.
Extremely great artwork and psychedelic. It is right in that peak. Very vibrant and colorful. And, of course, they remastered it about, 6 years ago and re-released it into the movies. But even in its time, it was extremely colorful. I don't know... Who was actually the main person that approached the Beatles about it? Because I don't think it was their idea. I think they were approached to put this into animation, to a movie. And that's a whole nother story. You know, it's like people have, if I can just segue this, you know, I'd be curious if there's any callers out there that want to share their memory of TV and rock and roll, because I would like to hear, you know, what was an iconic moment for them or something they saw was controversial.
Well, I want to bring up this point, too, for the people listening. John, if you remember, Paul McCartney had an interview just a year ago, and the Beatles' original plan was to make their own version of the Three Musketeers. And that was talked about as early as 67, and it would have been a serious movie if all four of them playing the Musketeers. Couldn't you have seen Paul McCartney as D'Artagnan? And I know Ringo probably had to have been Orpheus, there was no doubt. But they were certainly going to make the Three Musketeers as the Beatles.
I don't know if that would have worked. What do you think? That didn't sound right.
Well, I think Paul and John at the time thought they had an idea for this. They wanted to show that they could be actors at the time.
And take it seriously.
But they wanted to write a soundtrack for it. And Paul told about this in an interview. And he said they really seriously discussed it with 20th Century Fox. And 20th Century Fox was really interested in this. And you always wondered if they wouldn't went ahead. And they had actually the idea of the Rolling Stones being Rich Lou's bad guys. Wouldn't that have been classic?
Oh, my goodness.
The
I would
Rolling
watch
Stones,
that.
There was talk
now you got, it. And it, yeah, now you yeah, got my yeah. attention.
Yeah, because the Rolling Stones would have been under Rich Lou, and they talked about this. Same way when David Bowie tried to buy the rights for The Wizard of Oz. He tried to buy that off of Turner, and he had his own idea of a movie, and he was going to play the wizard. And he already made connections with Madonna to play the Glenda the Good Witch. And, boy, that'd been a built witch, I'll tell you that. Then he negotiated with Tina Turner to be the Wicked Witch of the West. And he wanted the members of Queen to be like the work in Oz. And I thought to myself, couldn't you have seen Freddie Mercury walking with the Munchkins? But these are some stuff. There was a real good book out on this, and I've read this. It said, what if they would have done some of this stuff? And Bowie wanted to do The Wizard of Oz so bad, and the only thing is he could not find the right girl to play Dorothy. He had several people in his head. One of them was Marianne Faithfull, he even brought up. So I don't know. It would have been interesting what it would have been.
Yeah, that's crazy. I never thought of that. Until you said the Rolling Stones is the bad guys, I was thinking, I don't know about that. But now I would have gone to see that. I thought that would have been really good.
Yeah, John, you're interested. And couldn't you see Richard, Keith Richards and Mick Taylor?
Yeah, he'd fit perfectly into
Lou.
That. He'd have been great in that role. That's awesome. Well, one thing I just throw out there when we're talking about the Beatles and Yellow Submarine and animation being able to do things that real film can't do, and you can all you have really is the limitations of your imagination and the technical know-how to put it on film. The one of my favorite bands, Plateau out of Canada, who I just think is a very underrated band. I love them, and I've talked to them several times. If you get a chance on YouTube, guys, go out and search on A Routine Day. And A Routine Day was a song that they had. And there was a big project right after, I think, around the second album they put out. They were on Capitol, and the project was to do an animated film. And they had Routine Day filmed, but then, you know, everything fell out. And they didn't have money or backing after that. But it would be interesting to the listening audience and for you guys to tell me what you think of that, because it's a really cool movie. It's only a couple of minutes long, and they used this kind of ahead of their time animation, and they had it's pretty awesome. So I think that kind of fits in too, because you know they were a band that was. They stood on their own two feet musically, but they were always right there with like bands like Oasis. And if it wouldn't have been for the Beatles, they wouldn't be there. It was like they weren't tribute bands, but were bands that took. It was like passing the torch, you know. Now the Beatles aren't making the music anymore. We're going to play some chords. We're going to do some stuff that maybe will make you think of the Beatles. And I think visually it's really good. And I think it's like a great point you guys are making tonight, because I can listen to music. I don't know if you guys are like this, but if you talk to somebody, sometimes you always want to see what they look like. It's like,
yes.
What's that person look like? What's that band look like? Well, you know, I hear the band and you think, oh, look them up, because now you can look them up. And that's what started to happen. So when do you think, let's ask this to John, when things started, like you were talking about the dark period where there wasn't any like exposure to the rock groups, and then that was right before MTV, is that correct?
Yes. Dave and I, we kind of lived from 1972 to 81, because 81, as I said, was when MTV started. I think that was the rise of probably a popularity of rock and roll magazines, why they were selling so well, because you wanted to see, what did this artist look like? You heard the song, but, you know, they weren't getting on that much TV exposure if you weren't staying up late at some weird hour, and there was no VCR back then to record it. And, for instance, I will give you an example as late as 1976. I was really curious, what does Boston look like? I know their music. They got this album cover that has this, like, spaceship-like thing going on, and they give me one picture, but, like, you know, I want to see what do they look like when they're actually performing. And so it was a period there where even a group as popular as the Eagles, you know, now it's amazing how they come up with all these old films from the 70s. Like, where were they when I was wanting to watch them when they were making these songs in the 70s? I don't remember them being on TV, but they sure have enough films now they seem to show. We didn't know really what they looked like. There was this kind of a mystique. And,
Led Zeppelin, John. Led Zeppelin never got that. You want to think about that, too. And just amazing to me. The dark era again on that point there.
And I think one other thing I would add to that was that rock and roll groups got away from making movies too. See, because in the 60s you had to, as an outlet, if you didn't see them on TV, well, they might just make a full length movie. And if it wasn't a concert movie, they got away from acting. I mean, you didn't have having the Wild Weekend anymore of as far as the Dave Clark Five or Herman's Hermits and Hold On. By the 70s, they really just were not acting.
And The Song Remains the Same was a very strange movie. Hey, I'll tell you a point, too, guys. And this is very, how many of you guys remember Harry Nilsson's TV special was animated called Me and My Arrow about a little boy? Yeah, and Mary takes these all, and they go to Arrow Land. And
that was
and everything,
really good.
And it was a takeoff, and Peter Max did all that. And I brought that up to some people the other day, and they said they never heard of it. I said, I remember well that special. And Harry Nilsson did all the songs on that. And Harry Nilsson was one of these guys that would not appear on TV, but he was willing to do an animation special. So here we go again.
That was cool. I'm glad you brought that up, because that soundtrack is really great. It's so good. And I love that song, Me and My Arrow, and it's just pop music. It's really, really interesting. But you are right. You know, when you go back to, like, we travel back a little bit to the Partridge Family and those TV shows and the Monkees, where they said, okay, we're going to make a TV show and we need these people to come in and play musicians. What do you think, and we'll play a couple of songs here in a minute from those bands, but what do you think that did to the real musicians that were working really hard to get exposure and to get on TV? And now here you go. You have these guys that are just actors. Now they're a rock band.
That's a good point, because you think of the Partridge Family, David Cassidy, due in part to the Partridge Family TV show, certainly became one of the biggest selling artists.
He was from
71 to 74. I mean, he was up there, and same with Bobby Sherman, who had a couple of TV appearances and was well liked. I believe he did Here Comes the Bride was one show, and he was on Shindig for a while, and he was one of those people you just see on TV a lot. He'd be a guest. the thing about it, I think that might have contributed to some why some of these rock artists were getting away from being on Prime TV, because they didn't like how it had to be laundered, if you will, had to be cleaned up to be on primetime TV. And I don't think they wanted to be themselves, and I think they probably might have viewed it as sort of selling out to the general corporate world.
Yeah, and with like the Partridge Family are based on the Cow Seals, which I'm a big fan of the Cow Seals. I think that, you know, I saw them live last summer, and I loved their show, and I think Susan Cow Seal is amazing. If you haven't heard any of her new albums, it's kind of Americana. She writes her own stuff. It's like neo-country rock stuff. It's mm-hmm. incredible stuff. And
yeah.
they were very, very good musicians. So then – but didn't they were rejected to play themselves on the show because they didn't look
yes.
right? Is it?
Yes.
It was look.
And
was
that's what led to the Partridge Family.
Hey, remember,
yeah.
when Steve,
you know?
Remember when Stephen Stills wanted to be a monkey? Remember when Stephen Stills wanted to join the monkeys? They said, Stephen, you don't have a face to be a monkey.
That's and, correct,
and,
yeah.
And it's unbelievable how, like John said, they wanted to make it more clean cut. We got all these images of an Alice Cooper, a Jim Morrison. Let's have somebody that we can control, and we can make them look like they're all clean cut, and they wear little shirts and ties and everything. They're all tippy-toeing down Happy Lane. And so I hope Marcy ain't listening.
Which is a very
She'll
good
get
point.
On you, buddy, next time she sees you.
She, true. Which is a very good point in this dark era. From 1972 to 81, we're not saying rock and roll was not on primetime TV. The Partridge Family, if you consider them rock and roll, they were on primetime TV, but it was under my conditions of the corporate world. Here's how
yeah.
we will present rock and roll. So yeah. it can be during the family hour.
We're controlling it. We're going to tell you what to say, how to look, how to comb your hair. You know, yeah, that's a great point. And then they would, like, okay, let's bring, like, Grand Funk, like you said, David, on the show, and Farner takes his shirt off. It's like, no, put your shirt back on, buddy. That's like, we can't do that.
Hey, here's another thing I want to bring up. Then you had the animated group, the Archies. Sugar, and Don Kirshner
oh, yeah.
made a mint with them, and poor Andy Kim didn't get to get anything out of it. But then I think what hurt the Archies when Jughead and the Hot Dog left the band and formed their own band.
Yeah, Jughead, yeah, he was always a rebel.
Yeah, oh, he was.
He was like Keith Richard, yeah. He's just like Keith Richard. It's funny that you bring up the Archies. We could do a whole show on the bubblegum era.
Oh,
because
definitely.
That was a fascinating time where you talk about controlling things. They
oh,
would take
definitely.
Bands like, and make them into other bands and change their names and their and it was like you didn't know what was going on. Bands that you would hear you thought were this band and that they were actually that band, and studio musicians, and it was like a sleight of hand, you know, like
it's a whole
card
show
game.
In itself. Kama Sutra label lived for doing that.
Yeah,
and they'd bring in this. But one of my favorite Archie cartoons, there's a new comic book coming out in October called The Archies Versus the Ramones.
I'll get that.
It's set in the 90s, and it's actually coming out, isn't it, John? And they end up in a battle of the bands.
I saw it. I must say I saw it. I still can't believe it.
I would listen to that. That would be a good show.
I get laughing
well,
thinking about it.
Yeah, we'll take a break, play a couple songs, and be back to conclude our interview and our show with John and David Timmons on TV's portrayal of rock and roll through the decades. It's been a great show. We'll play a couple songs. We'll be right back after this.
In the middle of a good dream, like all at once I wake up from something that keeps knocking at my brain. Before I go insane, I hold my pillow to my head and spring up in my bed, screaming out the words I dread. I think I love you. This morning I woke up with this feeling
didn't know how to deal with, and so I just decided to myself I'd hide it to myself and never talk about it, and did not go and shout it when you walked into the room. I think I love you. Up against, I don't know what it's all about. I got so much to think about.
Take that last train to Clarksville. That's the Monkees. We heard before that the Partridge Family with I Think I Love You. Two great songs. two really catchy pop songs that you can't get out of your head. They were created for that reason and that reason only. And you'll find yourself tonight as you're doing whatever you're doing, and you'll be all of a sudden thinking something, a little band is playing in your head singing, "I think I love you."
That's
and you
scary.
Can't turn it off. And you can't get the turn-off switch, David.
It keeps
coming back on, 3 o'clock in the morning. It's like, it's one of those songs. And you talked about the Kama Sutra and all that stuff. I think that would be a really interesting show. I've actually interviewed a couple of bands from that era. The Lemon Pipers were a part of that. The Music Explosion was a part of that whole thing. So I think we could probably get some guests on to talk about it. And that would be about manufactured music.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
That'd be interesting, wouldn't it, John?
Yeah. It is because it's its own genre. No doubt about it. It's all fun and uplifting music I thought we'd have a caller by now, John. I was all set to hear some people's comments out there.
We have not gotten a caller tonight, so
okay.
Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. You
have
to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, you know one thing about it, maybe they're just enjoying it so much. But I'll tell you one thing. Well, I was listening to Last Train to Clarksville, and I was listening to that song, and I remember the night the Monkees performed that on TV. And I watched that, and I thought to myself, I said, they're a takeoff of. I'm glad Marcy. I hope Marcy has a listen to this. I said, they're a takeoff of an English sounding band. I said, and everything. But then I found out the studio musicians they had with them. It was just, man, I tell you, it was amazing. But David Cassidy, I got to bring this up about David Cassidy. I know we don't have too much time. David Cassidy was trying to make a comeback, so he made a Glitter album. And it's very rare now. And Mark Bolan played on that.
Wow.
Lou Reed. And I believe, I want to say it was Main Man Productions out of England produced it. I have never heard a cut from it, and I could have bought it once for 99 cents, but I just said, nah, it's David Cassidy. And on the cover, he's got a silver suit on, flying through a bunch of stars. It says "Get Glittery" with David Cassidy.
Does he have makeup on? That's scary.
I think he does, don't he, John?
I think he does. I know the suit is reminds me of the one that Rick Derringer wore for All American Boy.
Same kind of suit. Yeah.
You know, because it was that real silver suit when the album had "Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo."
I can remember this well, and I don't know I don't think it got any airplay. If it did, that I can say, but it was interesting.
But you know, those last two songs you played, they were both number one songs. I mean, they were huge hits. And you know, back to rock and roll on TV and Clean It Up. Saturday morning, when it was actually used to be cartoons in the 70s, they would put along with the Beatles. Jackson 5, ABC had their own cartoon of them for 2 years.
Yeah.
The Banana Splits. You can't leave out the Banana Splits.
Those guys were creepy. I never did like the Banana Splits.
Well, you know, Flegel always had an image about him. He kind of free Madonna.
There was the all-girl animated group they made into a movie maybe about 4 or 5 years ago called it was Josie and the Pussycats.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, what I'm saying, it was an avenue for cleaning up rock and roll and get it to the preteens. You know?
Groovy Ghoulies, John. And remember Chick-A-Boom? And remember they changed the name of it, but it was the Groovy Ghoulies because the werewolf was the lead singer. But it was really I can't think of the name.
Well, the artist that they give credit, we don't know who his real name is. They list it as Daddy Dewdrop.
Yeah, Daddy Dewdrop. But
yes,
I still say
it's
the werewolf.
And John, you remember the song Chick-A-Boom, Chick-A-Boom, Don't You Just Love It? Chick-A-Boom, Chick-A-Boom. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the name of the group was the Groovy Ghoulies that sung it.
Funny. Yeah, we'll have to try to dig that up, maybe get a member of that band on.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
I love
maybe
that kind of stuff. Yeah, they see it, they're out there somewhere. Yeah, get the werewolf on. Well, what are some of the things, guys, that you'd like to mention? We got 6 minutes left that we haven't talked about yet in the show about the relationship between rock and roll and television.
Well, I will bring up the point. We'll never get over the relationship. It began in the 50s, and I still say there's always going to be a taboo. I don't care if that rock star is 75 years old. They're still afraid of letting them speak their minds on TV or do what they want. I think we're still going to see that. And I hope. And one thing now, though, with YouTube and everything, you can always see the rock stars you want. And like I said, I think there's always going to be that little bit of mystery to the rock and roll bands, and I'm glad for that, too.
Yeah.
I think the thing I can take away from this, John, is that I agree, even today, there's this rebellion about rock and roll, and they're sort of feeling insecure about what they might do. Perfect example I'm going to give you just happened in 2016, this year. Steve Miller Band goes off on Hall of Fame and tell them, I don't like the way you operate. You don't know how to host performers. You made me pay tickets to get my performers here. You know what HBO does. HBO has the contract to air it, but they aired it on tape delay 3 weeks later. And when you watch it, they completely edited all that out. And all you see is Steve Miller Band perform. You think everybody's happy and la-di-da.
They made his wife pay for a ticket.
Oh, that's awful.
And so
I didn't know that.
Rock and roll. Yeah. They put out what they want you to see. Yet I can see, and I mean, I like my share of country music. Don't get me wrong, but my gosh, how many country music award shows do we have to watch on prime time on CBS, NBC, and ABC? Eventually, does everyone get an award in country music?
Yeah, I think it is. That's like, you know, everybody on the team gets a trophy. Everybody in country music gets an award, and it takes
like
a lot of award shows.
And pro wrestling, everybody gets a belt.
Yeah, I want my belt. But I think this is a great, great show tonight, guys. I really appreciate it. It's always so much fun having you guys on. We'll have to get together and get our brain cells together, come up with the next show. We'll just keep doing these. But I think that there's so much. And one thing, John, that I've found through this show, a lot of people listen to the podcast. So I don't know if they listen live, but there's always a lot of people listen to this afterwards. And always remember the timmonsrock.com. That's where you can keep up with the Timmons brothers. You got a couple minutes. Anything you'd like to talk about, things going on with the Timmons brothers in the future?
I want to encourage people, as you said, John, to go on timmonsrock.com. They can get the latest of what we're doing. We got some live shows coming up, including the university tour. When we do Parents' Day, Family Day weekends, it's becoming more and more popular. And so word out there. If you haven't booked us for 2016, maybe you want to look at 2017. We will bring the Rock and Roll Trivia Show. It's a great show for Parents Weekend on college campuses.
And the people listening out in Rock Hill, I want them to come and see me so you can see my pretty face when I come down there.
And you'll sign an autograph for them.
Oh, yes,
that's awesome. Yeah, well, thanks, guys. I might see David here in just a little bit over at the Sock Hop. And, I could throw a rock at the building it's going to be in. That's how close it is. Isn't that crazy? And the professors are so good. Yeah, they're so good that I can't believe that they're going to be right there. That's just amazing. But thank you so much for listening to John Talk Radio, for supporting the show through the years. We're started in 2008, or over 650 episodes in, which I think is pretty cool. And really, you guys have been on quite a few of them, so we couldn't do it without you. And we couldn't do it without you guys out there and listening and supporting these kind of shows. So thanks, guys. Have a great good one.
Thanks a lot, John, for having us.
We'll do it again, and we'll talk to everybody later. Everybody have a nice evening.
You get up in the morning, you hear the ding-dong ring. You look up on a table, you see the same darn thing. You find on a table, no fork up in the pan. But if you say a thing about it, you'd be in trouble with a man. I left the midnight special shine a light on me. Oh, let the midnight special shine its ever-loving light on me. Now, if you're ever in a Houston, oh, you better walk right. Oh, you better not gamble, boy. I say you better not fight. Well, out a sheriff, he'll grab you, and the boys will pull you down. And then before you know it, you're penitentiary bound. Oh, let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine its ever-loving light on me. So let the midnight special shine a light on me. Oh, let the midnight special shine its ever-loving light on me. I said, let the midnight special shine a light on me. Oh, let the midnight special shine its ever-loving light on me.